Moncrief on News Talk.
Next month, though, the Galway Comedy Festival kicks off on the 21st and features the usual impressive range of comics, among them a man who's been there once or twice before, Phil Jupitus. Good afternoon.
How you doing?
Is this your millionth time playing in Galway?
I think it is my million and seventh.
Yeah.
If you're keeping count.
Yeah.
It's been a while, isn't it? Yeah. I was trying to work out, it would be easier if I tried to work out the ones I didn't do. And there were a few of them over the years, because when I was touring in sort of theatre shows and things, I know that I couldn't do them.
Yeah.
I think one time I was in The Producers, the Mel Brooks musical, and another time I was in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, I think.
Mm.
I think one time I was doing Shakespeare. So it's a very reason to not be in Galway.
Yeah, fancy. Yeah.
Doing The Bard.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, because I did interview you before in Galway.
Aye.
Maybe 15 years
ago. That'll be it. Yeah. Defo.
Something like that.
It's been going for, has it been going for 20 years?
Must be thereabouts. Yeah.
Yeah.
And has your, because what you're doing this year doesn't really sound like stand-up per se.
No.
You're almost kind of moving into your other area of interest.
I've kind of stopped doing the stand-up. It's just, I have a feeling, you know, it's the thing with stand-up comedy, I think it's a very personal kind of performance art form. I think it's very kind of down to, I think you need a passion for it to be good. I think you need to care what you're talking about. It's not just telling jokes.
It can
just be telling jokes, but I think the best stand-up has a bit of meat to it in a way, and I kind of don't feel that anymore myself. I've, if there's anything I want to say, I'd sooner be a bit more considered about it, right? So I still write poetry, and if I want to have a laugh, then I can do improv comedy with the, you know, a gang of people on stage and where you're mucking about.
Yeah,
and I think that still has value to it as a form of sort of, you know, that kind of knockabout clowning I've always quite liked, you know. But I think stand-up, there's a discipline to it that I kind of, yeah, I'm 63, Sean, I'm 63. I'm sort of done with it, I think.
Yeah. So that's a change in you, or is it when you look at the stand-up scene now?
Well, I mean, firstly, there's more of them.
Certainly,
you know, it's and, you know, they teach it at universities now. You know, Dr. Oliver Double at the University of Kent does a module in stand-up comedy. I think there's a couple of universities now that, you know, stand-up is part of the drama module. And so when it becomes something that you can, you know, study and, you know, there are techniques and you can learn and be practical at, rather than something kind of you take to by the seat of your pants, which was when, you know, I started at the same time as people like Alan Davis and Joe Brand and, you know, Eddie Izzard. And so we were just misfits. We all had day jobs for a kickoff. I mean, Alan had been to drama school. Eddie had been to drama school. Joe was a psychiatric nurse. I'd been a civil servant. And been doing some performance poetry. So that was my entry, was starting it as a sort of ranting poet in the 80s. And then just basically the chit-chat between the poems took over from the poetry itself. And then I didn't even know that was a thing. You know, the first time you see someone like Billy Connolly who's telling stories and just being engaging, I used to think comedy was, you know, someone in a dinner suit and a bow tie telling jokes about their mother-in-law.
Yeah. Which it was.
It was at the time. You know, it was a very prescribed form. But and now, of course, we realise it's many, many things. It's everything from, you know, Harry Hill and a giant inflatable sausage right the way through to, you know, Rich Hall improvising country songs about members of the audience. You know, even, you know, Dave from the Rubber Bandits, you know, doing his thing, you know, wearing a shot bag on his head, still getting laughs. It's Jason Byrne interrogating his front row. It can be anything, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's
so. Can you really teach it? Can you kind of systematize it and say, "Well, this is what you should. These are the beats, and this is how you do it."
I feel that what you can't teach is how good someone's going to be. What you can do is give guidelines for how to approach situations. So I think that's nice. And, there's things I wish that I'd listened to or learned. I learned the hard way. I think that...
Well, all your generation learned from not laughing and go, oh, that didn't work.
But in bad gigs, you learn more from a bad gig than you do from a good one, you know.
Yeah.
And if we sat here and we had a longer show to do this on, you know, I could very easily tell you 10 awful gigs, describe where they were, what the crowd were like, why it went bad, how it went bad. But you asked me to describe my 10 best gigs, I've no idea.
Yeah.
No idea at all.
Well, those 10 worst gigs, were they always, did you always get off stage and say, now, these are the things I did wrong? Sometimes there's just weird vibe in the room.
What is annoying is when within half an hour, you realise what you could have done to avert it.
Mm, yeah.
If like a few days later, you go, oh, if I'd done that, you don't feel so bad. But if you immediately realise if I'd done thing A, then that wouldn't have happened. I remember one time... I was supposed to be comparing a gig, and instead of comparing the gig, the guy put me on during the interval. Now, it's the interval.
Mm.
People want to just go and get a beer.
Mm.
People have... So I went on in the middle, in the interval of a Who concert. The Who. So they just finished playing Won't Get Fooled Again. So they finished Won't Get Fooled Again, and it's... Noel Gallagher is on stage with them, windmilling away next to Pete Townsend. Bow. Ladies and gentlemen, Phil Jupitus. Now, I would have booed me off. I would have booed me off. So it's that sometimes, you know, firstly, what was interesting was the guy that booked me for that gig, of course, like, you know, his thing is that I wasn't any good. I was just, there's no way you can do it.
No.
You cannot make that situation work, you know, it's yeah. And so then once he started doing specific comedy gigs for his charity events, they went really, really well. But, you know, that's sort of by the by. But when I look back at them, you know, it's a kind of badge of pride to think, you know, when people say to me the Royal Albert Hall, I get PTSD.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be booed off, get booed off at the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah, absolutely. Do it in class. But because it often strikes me that, say, your generation and, you know, having had multiple experiences but there's a generation who will be playing in Galway who all were TikTok during the lockdown.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I kind of wonder, are they going to go through this again? Because they might have had a massive following on TikTok and it all goes very well. And then you get in a stage where there's a real-time interaction of it.
I think that the meat of the act, as it were, the performing in front of people, you always have that. I think that what TikTok is used as most effectively now, it strikes me, by the younger comics, is they can, when they do crowd work, so everyone now has their acts filmed. And so anything that they do that's sort of off-piste, that isn't part of the normal routine, they can pop that on the internet and, oh, here's me being hilarious and dealing with someone in the front row. And they've got a little kind of 30-second nugget. And that's how you keep yourself... And I think that the acts that's just the nature of life. It's the way we are now. You know, the internet is our principal form of, you know, media.
Yeah.
And so... therefore, you know, you need to sort of address that. I just can't be bothered.
Yeah.
That idea that you would just kind of, oh, God, I have to do this, edit that, get it up. You're your own broadcaster now. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. Because you're using you have an Instagram account, but that's full of art.
Mostly, yeah.
Have you finished your degree at this point?
Well, I mean, very sadly, I had to truncate the degree and I'm still kind of mithering over whether or not to finish at the minute. Yeah, I had to step out because of a family situation. But and I was only 6 weeks away from finishing and I kind of inquired about going back, but they want me to do the whole last year again. And I'm like... when you're 63 and you weigh 25 stone, time's a premium. So I'm sort of, and I must admit that, you know, I've been a professional artist since the early 80s. I taught myself. I was a cartoonist. I was a graphic designer. I used to make, you know, posters, record sleeves for people, cartoons for magazines. You know, I did all that off my own back, taught myself. But you do kind of wonder if you didn't go the conventional route. You know, oh, did I miss anything by not going to art school? Anyway, very short, I didn't.
Oh, really? Right. I thought at a point you were thinking of maybe I'll do a master's or a PhD.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's certainly what I was moving towards. The One of my dissertation tutor was like, "You should do a master's," you know. And then she was very with a view to going on and then doing a PhD. But academia is it was never my strong suit. I'd need such kind of shepherding through the process. I'd need someone to kind of. I need daily tutorials, just sitting with someone talking about it.
Yeah.
And just, you know, just because the way my brain works, I think it's because there's so many different things that are going on in there. I just need someone to go, don't think about that, don't think about that thing. But I need that on a daily basis, really. So some people are just like that.
Yeah.
That's life.
But you have like a studio now in your house in Scotland and you're working away there.
I still make a lot of collage work. I mean, I did, there's a, the town where I live in Fife, there's an annual art festival. And I thought, I was trying to think of a different way of doing it rather than just sort of, you sort of open your studio, you have an open studio situation, people come in, look at your work, say things, leave. I didn't like that. That seemed passive to me. So what I did this year was I did a thing called the Art Hatch. So at the front of my house, I've got a half door. So I would lean over the door and like, I go, right, okay, do you want to make a collage? And so we had postcards and then I had a big pile of old magazines and things. I went, right, pick three things out of that pile of paper there and we'll put them on this postcard. We'll turn it into something else. And so I made about 110 pieces over the course of the week with people. And people either got it or they didn't. It's a very kind of fast. But I did like that idea that, you know, instead of people coming in and let me look at your art, instead of that, I was in a position where, no, if you want to see some art that I've made, we're going to make it together. So, yeah, that was great fun. I loved that.
Gosh, that's a lovely idea. You mentioned record covers. Did you design record covers?
There was a poet called Attila the Stockbroker. There was an old country performer who was on the London cabaret circuit called Hank Wangford.
Oh, yeah. I remember Hank.
I did a sleeve for Hank. I did a remix sleeve for Fatboy Slim when he was Beats International. Yeah, that was a long time ago. But I just did like a rough design that then a real kind of layout artist took over. But I kind of did the remix design for it, yeah.
But do you have a little credit on it? Is this like, could I find this on Discogs?
No. I mean, if I saw it in a shop, I'd go, yeah, I did that. But I didn't get a credit. The thing, when you worked at the label, it's like that kind of, anything you do in this building belongs to the record company. It was one of those sort of things. So I was like,
We wish you the best in Galway and with the art as well. Tickets go on sale Tuesday, 16th of September. You can find out all about that at the galwaycomedyfestival.ie. Phil Jupiter, thanks a million.
Oh, thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.